Hey, everybody, welcome back to the Matt Report special live edition with a man who should have been on the show 7 years ago. Like, before the show even started, I should have just consulted with him first about building a WordPress business. It's Josh Strebel, founder of Pagely. We're going to talk about bootstrapping a business in this super competitive world of not just hosting, but managed WordPress hosting, enterprise, all that fun stuff. Before we get into it, what is the show all about? Well, mattreport.com/subscribe is the number one way to stay connected. It's a podcast all about WordPress. We bring on entrepreneurs, talk about their struggles and wins in the WordPress space. We share those lessons with you, and hopefully you get a little something out of it. You learn how to improve your WordPress business, whatever it is, products, service, that kind of thing. We are wrapping up season number 4 of the Matt Report. And it's been an amazing season. Netflix style, released all 10 episodes. Many of you binged on listening to that. That's mattreport.com/season4. And then you have enjoyed the slow trickle effect of getting those through iTunes, Stitcher, and whatever favorite podcatcher you use to listen to these shows. And we're wrapping up with this special live edition. We've got another special live edition coming out. And then the last episode, episode 10, will wrap up season 4. And guess what? I couldn't have done it without sponsors who sponsor independent media like this. Also, one of the guests today, Josh Strebel of Pagely, sponsored this show for season 4. We can't thank him enough. So if you're listening right now, throw him a tweet. Thanks, Josh. Thanks for supporting independent media like this. Thanks, Valet, for putting out a great product, for putting out Valet Metrics, and for supporting the Matt Report season 4. We couldn't have done it without both of you gracious sponsors. So if everybody has a moment, go ahead and thank them on Twitter and ask questions. If you're listening on YouTube on YouTube Live, go ahead and drop a question in the chat box. If you're listening and watching on Facebook, drop a question in there. That's all I got. It's mattreport.com. And today we're talking to the 2020 presidential candidate, or so it looks like from the view of his office, Josh Strebel. Josh, welcome to the program, sir.
You called me out. I wasn't going to announce my formal candidacy for another few years.
For folks who don't know who you are and what you do, give us that two minute elevator pitch of what you do in the WordPress space.
Oh, well, I guess chief among it is I'm a professional rabble rouser. I probably have a bit of a reputation for speaking my mind a little too often and get myself in trouble. But I guess if I had a business card, it would say I am a co-founder and CEO of Pagely, which is the first managed WordPress host, which is now a billion-dollar category. And, there's plenty of names in that space now. I think what makes Pagely different a little bit is we kind of focus at the very top of that pyramid, enterprise, big scale, kind of the hard edge cases for WordPress, Got a great team behind me. We're a 13-year-old company, and we've been doing Pagely for about 7, with a prototype a little bit before that. So, I've never known anything but entrepreneurship since I got out of college. We took the last of our honeymoon money, actually, the money we got from our wedding, to use it to pay the lawyers to incorporate our company. So since college, I've been nothing but hustle and grind and sweat and tears and broken hearts. Thankfully, the last couple of years, it's getting a little better, though.
No, that's great. Could you just take us back real quick to when you weren't doing the hosting company? You mentioned you had maybe like this sort of hybrid thing in place, maybe this prototype in place. I mean, what was that like to make the leap from depending on client services, knowing that that's all you knew at the time? I mean, can you take us back to that nugget in time where you said, you know what, to heck with all that, I'm just going to push forward on that? I mean, what was the mindset like for something like that?
Well, to go back to the beginning real quickly, 2003, we started a web design agency. So we scaled that to 5 or 6 people. We were doing fairly well in terms of a 5 or 6 person agency could. And we were kind of getting the itch on, what about the product space? What about something that is a little bit more guaranteed monthly revenue? Rather than waking up on the first of every month at zero, and figuring out how do we go make X amount of dollars this month to cover payroll and expenses and things like that. We were kind of interested in figuring something out that was a little bit more repeatable or had a little bit more momentum. So a recurring monthly subscription business or something. And at about 2006, my wife Sally was overhearing me on some phone calls with some sales prospects. And in the early days, you know, a website we maybe charged $1,000, $2,000 for. You know, this is 03 and I was right out of college, so that seemed like a lot of money. But by 06, 07, we were, you know, charging $20,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000. And some of those early customers would call and say, hey, you did such great work 2 or 3, 4 years ago. Can you give me an update? Well, okay, here's our rate. And they're like, oh, whoa, we can't afford that. Where's the $1,000 rate? Well, I'm sorry, we can't be profitable at that price point anymore. So unfortunately, we can't help you. And Sally overheard a few of these conversations and was like, you know, why can't we help them? Why can't we figure something out to maybe productize some of what we do? And we were using WordPress at the time anyways. I think it was like 1.4B or something was the version. It was super early. And so that was kind of the genesis of, well, why don't we take WordPress, this thing called WordPress, and kind of put some structure around it with domain registration and theme choices and kind of package it as a monthly fee, you know, kind of a website builder product. And we did that for a couple, you know, 8, 9 months. It didn't really take off, so we shelved it. And then, but in 09, we came back to it, cleaned up all that code, added some new features, and launched that as Pagely. So the mental impetus was really, you know, that frustration of, man, you got to make payroll in 2 weeks, and we got 5 or 6, you know, invoices out. We got to chase these people down to get paid for our client services work. You know, maybe there's an easier way out there. Maybe we can do something that kind of builds on itself every month. And that was kind of the mental decision on why we switched.
So it seems like like this is the holy grail kind of business. Everybody's sort of, you know, I say everybody, but a lot of the people that I talk to are looking for that kind of solution. And the same pain points you're talking about from, you know, 8, 10, 12 years ago, in terms of running an agency, you know, having customers that you'd love to help, but they just couldn't afford, you know, to pay your small team. Those things still are happening today. I mean, if there's a small 2-3 person shop out there, I guess what's the best way for them to sort of move up channel from your perspective? I mean, any quick tips for something like that? I know it's the hustle, it's the struggle, it's selling, it's getting out there, but from your perspective, what could they do better to increase their chances at winning at this?
I think it can be boiled down to position yourself as a partner versus a vendor. And this is something we're actually doing with Pagely is as we continue to go up even higher in the stack, our customer base is looking for different things and looking for us to kind of take ownership of their project or the success of their project in a much more collaborative partnership role versus we're just a vendor that they cut a check to every month. And so even in the agency and the design space, the more that a client feels like you're thinking about their business as much as they're thinking about their business, and you make yourself invaluable and indispensable, and you're bringing solutions and really kind of working to grow that garden together, you can certainly keep raising your rates as you do that. And I've never heard a story, you know, I'm sure it exists, of somebody raising their rates and losing business. It's always the opposite. People raise their rates and get more business and better clients, or they reduce their stress, which maybe increases their profit margin. So, to sum it up, be a partner versus a vendor and charge more.
Right, right. And I was just on a podcast yesterday, Curtis McHale, and we were talking about this sort of the same thing. Like when you move up channel or you move to a higher price point, the lesson in this though is, if you take, let's say you do a website for $1,000, you realize that, you know what, that same $1,000 project, somebody would pay $5,000 for, somebody would pay $10,000 for. But the expectations shift a little bit or a lot with your customer in terms of the quality of service, not the code, you know, not so much like the design and the WordPress geeky stuff, but your level of service to them, phone calls, meetings, in-person meetings, offline availability, support, all that stuff. What have you learned going from, you know, hosting a blogger like me to big brands, you know, like Comcast, like Verizon? You know, how did your mindset change to cater to those types of people?
Well, what's interesting is I'm going to be a little contrarian here and say that in some cases, not all, the bigger the company, the less needy is the word. The less they actually need that constant reinforcement. It's much more of a, it's up, it's working, you're thinking of me, you're being proactive, and they don't really interface with us too much. Now that's an exception, not necessarily a rule. But you know, in hosting an enterprise or in hosting a big brand like this, there's a lot of work up front. We do, you know, sometimes 6, 8, 10 weeks of just legal, just to get the deal in place.
Sure.
And then there might be a 5, 6, 8, 10 week, you know, migration, onboarding, QA, you know, dev cycle. And then we have what we call a guided launch. So then there might be some time on the calendar where all teams are huddling in Slack, or even maybe we have a voice channel open, and we're right there with the internal team, flipping the DNS switch, watching the servers, making sure that launch goes correctly. And then there might be a 2 or 3 week phase of kind of tweaks and adjustments to make sure that we have them dialed in appropriately. And then, believe it or not, we might not hear from them for 6 months. We're still communicating to them, but they may not need us at that point. Now the to compare and contrast that, a Matt Report blogger, he may be a solopreneur, and he may really be relying on our team to essentially flesh out the rest of his operation. So we might get a lot more tickets, a lot more interaction, a lot more requests from that type of customer, frankly, than we do from a bigger customer. The end of the day, though, they're all looking for the same thing, whether you're the Matt Report blogger or Verizon, and that's the quality of service. I think is exactly what you said.
Yeah.
Your team's on point. They know that you have their best interests in mind. They know they can come to you and trust you to steer them in the right direction. And at the super high level, sometimes if you're not charged enough, you're not being taken seriously, believe it or not.
Yes. And that's one of the, you know, the larger lessons that, you know, people start either doubling their rates and they think that that's all they need to do. And even that number is, you know, too small for a bigger brand or even a medium sized brand to look at. Wait, can you really do this for that price? Because everybody else is telling us like 500,000, you came in at $2,500. Like, what is this?
Yeah.
Which is very common and something that people have to be aware of. So that actually leads me to a question that I didn't have written down, but how do you learn that lesson, right? Like, for, to me, that to know the price, right, especially in agency work and probably in enterprise sales now too, like, you have to know what they're willing to spend, what their average market price is for, you know, whatever service they might be looking for. In other words, you have to know what they're willing to spend at that level. How did you learn that? Was it a hard lesson? Did you sell too short in the beginning and now you've raised your rates, which they are much higher than when I first started out with Pagely? So are you learning that lesson along the way and sort of keeping up with that pace?
Absolutely. Let me come back to a very recent example of learning that lesson. But in the early days, it was a lot of trial and error. Our favorite way of selling at Pagely, and even when I was doing consulting work, is it's a very simple, how can we help? And then you just shut up and listen, right? And the customer will just bring everything up to you and show you all their problems and tell you all their problems. And then you just keep peppering questions. Oh, so if that's the pain point, what do you think the solution looks like? Okay, so this is a unique challenge you're having. What does it mean to your company to have that challenge go away or have that challenge addressed? And then, you know, somewhere in the conversation, you could bring up a question like, and what are you currently paying for this service? And so based on what their kind of pain, their level of pain is and their needs are, and maybe you've got some intel on what they're currently paying to address that need, can help you bracket kind of where you should come in at your price. Now, Page is pretty transparent in terms of our pricing. We don't just look at the inbound lead and say, okay, this is Comcast, and we automatically triple our rates. We don't work like that. But there is certainly some level of value, value-based pricing. And that's a whole other topic, which I'm sure your listeners are familiar with. So there's certainly some value-based pricing in there, but you have to be reasonable about it. You can't have one number published on the website and then send a quote over to a company at 10x that and then have that discrepancy, because I think you're moving out of a place of integrity and into a place of being a shyster at that point. So you really got to watch that. The funny recent example is we're still learning this lesson. We had a very large East Coast university migrate over to Pagely, and it was kind of they were bidding the project against four of the managed hosts. And little old Pagely got that deal. They're very happy and they're very excited, and they've been with us about 5 or 6 months now. We get nothing but great feedback from them. But they when they sent their PO over, and they because it's a state-run university, so they're very transparent with their accounting, and they're like, next fiscal year budget allocation to Pagely for X. This is a X percent savings over our previous vendor. And I realized we came in exactly almost of a dollar 50% cheaper. And I'm like, oh, man. So in hindsight, 6-7 months later, they absolutely love us. They've had no problems. They're like, why didn't we come to you sooner? And the whole time I'm thinking, and I'm getting paid 50% less. Ah, man. Yeah, So I wish I had a little bit more intelligence at that point where I could have maybe bridged that gap, because we're still profitable and making doing quite well on that particular account. But it obviously sounds like there was another 10-15% there that I could have picked up, and everybody still would have been happy.
One of the lessons that I continue to learn sort of as we move upscale with our own projects, and plenty of people listening to this have had this happen, is quite often the bigger type of brands, right? The people who are marketing directors in a bigger organization, they're not the business owner. So, they're looking for the right solution. They'll send me the RFPs that other agencies have filled out. And I've seen things like, holy crap, you're going to charge that much money. And it sort of gauges it. Or when I lose a contract or lose a deal, I'll ask those type of questions, right? So, if you're a freelancer or a boutique agency out there, that's something you definitely want to try to key in on if you can. You recently, and I'm going to, this is like a mashup of questions here, but I'm trying to find a consistent line to it. You recently have sort of moved out of that, not recently, but, and you never really were in the space, but in the world of $10 hosting, $30 hosting, $60 hosting. Now I think you are starting out at $200 or $300 per month for a handful of sites that you host, that kind of thing. What correlation have you drawn, or what kind of advice can you give to people who still are offering that sort of cheaper buy-in to the client? Like, have you found a lot of people still asking for the $100 plan, the $50 plan? Have you moved away from that entirely, and that sort of just ultimately elevated you to the better businesses that are out there? What's the feedback from that kind of pricing structure?
Well, when somebody does cancel with Pagely, we make that very easy, because I think trying to lock somebody in is about the worst thing you can do. So, it's a click of a button, they cancel, but we do ask, we basically make it a required field. Why are you canceling? And 9 times out of 10 on the sub $200 plan, the reason they cite is price. And that's actually kind of makes sense. And that's what we are expecting, because as the market has matured, as what we started 7 years ago has become somewhat commoditized, but mostly replicated, and brands like GoDaddy and brands like SiteGround, they can pack a lot of value. They can put a lot of the secret sauce, the magic, the wizardry, whatever it is, into a package and charge $8 for it. And so it was a conscious decision. Okay, we can't compete with GoDaddy's $1 billion marketing budget. We can't compete with SiteGround having a presence at 400 WordCamps a year. We can't, right? Because we're bootstrapped. You know, every penny coming in is very carefully watched. So we had to ask ourselves, in this new space, in this new market or this evolving market, where does a company like Pagely fit? Where does a company like Pagely survive? Survive's a key word there, right? Like, if we try to duke it out with these guys, we're probably going to lose and we're done. So how do we navigate and switch and zag and find the next kind of blue ocean? And so, you know, it was a very methodical, careful process, and just, it was kind of attrition as we started saying different things, you know, started positioning ourselves differently. We attracted a different type of customer. And then the other customers that may have come to us for that more, you know, $30 plan, they hit our site, not see the plan, and just abandon out, and they go to one of the other hosts. And so it was kind of an 18-month slow kind of gradual shift where we don't even necessarily get the lead anymore of somebody at that price point, because I think in the marketplace, Pagely's kind of has that brand perception now of, hey, if you want to host this type of site, you go to Pagely, and nobody else is really going to be able to help you with that. But if you're hosting this type of site, there might be 12 vendors to choose from.
Sure, sure. In the competitive landscape of WordPress hosting and venture capital startups, the traditional with air quotes, I know you can't see me, but with air quotes, do you feel like the hunter or the hunted because you haven't raised, you know, you haven't gone that traditional route where the TechCrunch route, you know, the Pando Daily route, we read all this stuff and everybody is, you know, signing things and you know, grabbing their Lambo, choosing their Lambo color at the time of the signing. Do you feel like the hunter or the hunted from this?
Definitely the hunted. Okay. Not hunted as in like jealousy or anything, but definitely hunted as in we've always had a target on our back.
Sure.
Since day one. And it started, believe it or not from competitors. It started with the community. When we first started Pagely, some people in the community were like, who the hell do you think you are charging money for WordPress? WordPress is free and it's a 5-minute install. What are you doing to justify $15? You know, F you, Pagely. So that was actually a common hate mail that we got. And then as competitors started replicating our offering and coming to market, they would obviously, you know, we were small at the time, super small, but they would put us up here and say, attack Pagely, how we're better than Pagely. We do this better than Pagely. And even to this day, I mean, WP Engine is 60 million a year in revenue. Pagely's not. Yet if you go to WP Engine, there's this great little how we compare to Pagely page. Okay, that's awesome that you still put us, you elevate us to the position where you want to attack. Awesome, that actually does me a good job. You know, that does me a solid now, but there's always been a feeling of a target on our back. It's becoming less so. I think most of the time we're probably just pushed into a corner and say, oh, let Pagely have their, you know, little corner of the board and we'll go eat the rest of it. And that's fine. We've kind of seeded that whole middle market. They can duke it out.
Right, right. I think, and not to get all doom and gloom for people listening, but I really think that the WordPress space, well, certainly hosting, but definitely products like plugins, things are going to get more competitive from like what you've experienced over the last few years of that sort of level of competitiveness. I think that same thing is going to happen in the plugin space, right? Where you're going to see contact forms duking it out more openly, right? You're going to see e-commerce platforms duking it out more openly. I don't think it's going to be like this aggressive thing, but if you look at a traditional product like a car, right? You go to the Audi's website, you pull up a comparison tool. Like every car manufacturer's website has a comparison tool. That's something I don't see happen on product WordPress product pages, right? And I think this is going to happen more. And I'm curious on how the competitive landscape is going to start shaping the product space of WordPress.
Well, I think you bring up something very key there. And I don't think it'll be a war versus, say, Gravity versus Formidable Forms versus Ninja Forms.
Right.
But there's definitely consolidation, and people are going to shake out that these are the 1, 2, and 3 of the category, and then everybody else is meaningless at that point.
Got it.
There's WooCommerce and EDD, and I can't think of the other one over here, but the rest are meaningless. And so there used to be a time where there would be 20 great solutions to choose from for some plugin thing, and each one was interesting and had some market share in its own way. But I think, to your point, over the next couple of years, there's going to be a category leader, a second and third, and then nobody else is even in the conversation.
Walk with me down this deep, dark path as I paint this picture of WordPress experience, WordPress flavors. And I think that WordPress web hosts are in the advantage point of this. My thoughts are, because there are so many choices, because people are faced with so many questions, like we just talked about, which e-commerce plugin, which contact form plugin, which page builder do I use? My gut feeling is that hosts are going to start investing more in creating their own WordPress flavors. Again, air quotes in the air. Something like a Rainmaker platform, that kind of experience. Do you think that is coming? Is that the sort of trend that you see happening, where it's like, screw all this, like giving people all these options? They want a solid solution that's just turnkey, and we're going to deliver it to them. Maybe not Pagely, because enterprise might be so custom, but do you see that happening down market at all?
Absolutely. I think you're already seeing it. Some of the back channel rumors is that there's hosts already working on hosted e-commerce. Whether that's WooCommerce or not, I don't know, but they're definitely working on kind of your install profiles. I think that's an old term that Brad Williams at Web Dev Studios came up with, where it's like when the customer hits the sign-up form, it's, are you an e-commerce business? Are you a publisher? Are you a this? And so each one of those categories kind of sends them down a channel where there's much of the decisions already been made. Okay, if you're e-commerce, you're using EDD, or you're using WooCommerce. There's no other option given to you. And in the mid-market, the hosting companies, their focus is probably primarily on lifetime value. You know, that's Bluehost's whole deal. They can give it away for $2 a month because they know they're going to get the upsells on over the 18 or 24 months that person's a customer and make all that money. So the more they can stack into that plan, the more kind of configured and less, or reducing friction of that user, the more they can extract out in terms of revenue. So, and to your point exactly, the upper ends of the space, TenUp built WAMU, which we host. There's nothing out of the box that's gonna fit WAMU, right? It was all total WP REST API and React, and there's just no easy button for that.
Right. We're not done with the Haunted House of Terror ride. My next thing is, not to put you on the hot seat, Josh, but we're not done. My thing is the prediction of Calypso, right? Or, you know, before WordCamp Philadelphia, I put out a small prediction. Not that anybody listens to me. I mean, who the hell am I? But I put out this short prediction of an app facing WordPress, right? So we are now going to experience WordPress strictly from an app. And this is years to come, you know, if not at least the year of this being much more of a trend. And for WordPress to grow, right? So when I hear things like, we want to be 100% of websites, right? Of modern day websites, we're at 27% now. How do we get to 100? The only way I see it happening is a much more tighter controlled experience, you know, like Apple iOS, right? The experience of that is not fragmented like an Android. Do you see the collar getting tighter for WordPress.org the experience of WordPress.org. This is a lot. This is sort of future thinking, theoretical stuff here. But if you experience everything from an app from day one as a brand new user, what does that look like in your eyes? And because it's a hosted solution, doesn't that mean that they're going to have to sort of buddy up with some web hosts? And that's going to be interesting, right? To say the least. Your thoughts on that scariness?
I think actually .org will always, the OSS project will always maintain some level of, you got 1,000 choices for everything. Even though the ethos that they code WordPress to is what, decisions, not options. I don't think they're ever going to remove all those options in terms of themes and plugins, because I think they as a whole, that's been a good thing. But I could definitely see the Automatics of the world, the GoDaddies of the world, the SiteGrounds of the world saying, okay, yes, there's the Wild West still lives here at .org, but for your day-to-day user, there's a walled garden here at SiteGround, which is the WordPress widget thingamajig that's like a Squarespace style thing. And then there's a walled garden over here at GoDaddy that's kind of their custom assembly of features and things. And, you know, because you're exactly right in terms of the average user, right? I think that's a very clear distinction. People in the WordPress community that like us, we're not average users. But the average user coming to WordPress, the next 20% of the market share, yeah, they're looking at Squarespace, they're looking at Wix, they don't want to think and go through 12,000 plugins in the repo. So I don't think .org will necessarily sponsor or get behind any one particular thing. It'll always be kind of the melting pot, but certainly the big commercial players are going to start kind of building moats, building castles, putting up drawbridges, and just start kind of shepherding people into their little playground.
Sure. I want to shift gears just a little bit now. Speaking about building businesses and bootstrapping and all that stuff, how important is it to you and sort of where do you look to learn to cultivate your team, your employees, right? Like that whole discussion, I think, is something that I don't hear a lot of. Like everybody's always talking about the marketing hacks, the growth hacks, how I SEO'd my site and got to 1,000 users. But I'm interested to hear from you on how you invest in people, from support techs to VP of sales and marketing. Like what does that look like in your world and how important is it even for the small business out there?
It's always culture first for us. Talent is so important, but it's really all about culture because we're a closely held company. It's Sally and myself, and then there's a ring of three or four of our directors, and we're involved day to day on a very intimate level of all aspects of the company, and we seek out and hire others that will take the same level of ownership that we do. So the culture part is so key. We can't, there's no fat for anybody to just come in and put in a easy 6-hour day. That being said, we have very strict work-life balance policies, so we don't ask anybody to work a 10-hour day. But what we do ask is that during the 7-8 hours a day you give us, you are 120% efficient. You're on point with what you need to be doing. And that allows you to stop hard at 5 because we have families and we got dinners we got to make and kids to get in the bath, or we can take a trip on the weekend. So it's really finding that personality type that understands how to be a top performer and very efficient in the time allotted so that then they can have the balance of doing everything else. And I think some people get into trouble where they hire an ego or they hire someone who doesn't know how to balance their schedule. And so if you're hiring an ego, you get a lot of promises, but you don't always get the results. And if you hire somebody who doesn't understand how to balance their own time, you'll get someone that works like mad for 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 6 weeks, burns out and then disappears for a month. That's not going to sustain a business, you know. So the maturity of somebody being able to just kind of balance their own time and handle that, and Pagely doesn't have level one support techs. It doesn't have level two support techs. Everybody we hire, they're dang near junior engineers. And on their first day, everybody from support to marketing to sales has full SSH access to every server that we manage. They have full access into our accounting and our dashboard and our accounts receivable. We put that trust and that authority in them and then hold them responsible and accountable for the results. I think a lot of people get in trouble where they hire somebody and make them responsible and hold them accountable, but they don't give them any authority to make any decisions. They don't give them any trust.
Right.
And so, you know, are you going to bust your ass if somebody doesn't trust you?
Right.
I don't
right.
think so.
No.
And you know, the caveat there is that we have what we say in every interview, pardon the French, is don't fuck up. And what we mean by that is make a new mistake. It's okay to make a mistake. Just never make that mistake again. Right.
Right. Right. Right. No, that, I mean, that's great. That's great stuff. And what I'm going to do here is share a little insight on how I bring in new team members and give you the chance to think about like where you look to hire new people. But sort of the strategy that I have, because again, we're small team, bootstrap, we're not doing ridiculous, awesome projects 24/7, although it would be great. But I look at the real low level. Like I look at the seniors coming out of high school, right? Because there's a couple of universities right next to me. So I'll tap into the local high schools. Who is really good at computer science in high school? Who's won some local awards and things like that? And who is going to stay in the area? UMass, Dartmouth, Bristol Community College, that kind of thing. And I try to tap into them early. It's like farm league baseball, right? Like I'm trying to get these kids young, super young and out of school, which also means that they have no business, sense at all. Like they don't understand what we're doing, which is fine. Like what I'm getting at is like this whole sort of learning curve. But that's sort of my secret sauce to getting good development help at not the egocentric price model, right? You know, so, because like you, I'm sure you've experienced before is somebody says, hey Matt, I'll help you on that project. I'm $150 an hour. And then it's okay. I trust you, go at it. And then it's like, I should have hired somebody from Fiverr because it would have been the same experience. You know what I'm saying? And I'm charging $150 an hour from the agency perspective. And it's like, it's a wash, if not a loss, right? At that point. So that's secret sauce. Do you look for any untraditional ways to hire people and recruit people?
Untraditional ways. Well, most of our hires that come through referrals of existing employees. I'm sorry. We have this running joke that someday we're going to rename the company Dreamly because we have like six or seven old Dream hosters here. And one came over and then another and then another. And this wasn't me going to recruit out of DreamHost. This was just internally employees were like, yo, you got to come check out this awesome company. And, you know, so I think most of our support department are as old DreamHosters now. But it sounds like what you're saying, which is I think is absolutely key, is you can train skills, but you can't train culture. You can't train motivation. You can't train hustle. You can't train being polite, being nice, being personable. So all those soft skills to me are so much more important because we can train you the page way of doing it. As long as you got a base skill set, and actually, you know, the guys that we hire are already quite advanced, but saying I was hiring real entry level, as long as you got a base skill set, as long as you got these soft skills, we can work on the other stuff.
Yeah, no, that's a super important lesson there. One that, you know, at least in the model that I shared is definitely the big risk because I get these kids young, and what I find out a year, 2 years from now is they're not as motivated, and hustle effect. Not that I'm asking them; it's normal 9-to-5 stuff. There's no anything crazier than that. But you find that some dudes are just, and they're not hustling, right? And they're not doing it. And they're not really in it for the long haul.
Yeah. Especially out of college, some people are just, it's their first thing. They just want a year or 18 months and then they'll go on to bigger and better things. So that's something you just got to be cognizant of.
Yeah. You run it's like a little meetup, right? Is it at this point? It's like a little meetup. It's called Pressnomics. It is by far my most favorite event in the WordPress space and in the general market space, right? Technology and web, that kind of thing. Pressnomics 5 is coming up. There was a point where you were like, I don't even know if I want to keep doing this, but here you are again. What's new and exciting for the fifth iteration of this event?
Well, every one we do is the last one. We always tell ourselves that because A, usually by the end of it, we're pretty tired and we're like, we're never doing that again. But B, going into it with the mindset of this is going to be the last one, we need to hit a home run, it needs to be awesome. You know, it keeps you from getting complacent so that we actually care and try and make it awesome every time. And one thing we're doing with PN5 this year is we're changing the format up a little bit. We were initially going to do fewer, longer duration talks. You know, rather than 16, we're going to knock it down to like 10 or 8 actually. But then we decided instead to maybe keep a little shorter format, because I think I personally believe shorter talks are better because it forces the speaker to really be on point versus, you know, ramble for an hour. Not that anybody at Pressnomics ever rambled, but so in the second half of the first day, we're going to do breakout sessions. So we have what we're calling King's Corners, which was an idea that came from Alex King. So we'll break the room up into quadrants, and we're going to have an Illuminati in each quadrant kind of run an hour and a half bar camp. Chris Lemo will be running kind of the marketing positioning one. And I hope I don't get his name wrong. Jake Heckman, CEO of 10UP. Yep. No, John Heckman.
John Heckman.
Yeah.
What you've done is you've merged Jake and John together in some kind of wild creature.
Yeah. They were both on the email thread. But John Heckman will be doing an hour and a half bar camp on kind of business administration, the CEO type things. And so we think that'll be pretty interesting. The second day, we're going to be doing lightning talks, which we've always thought were fun in terms of there's no topic is off limits. There's some parameters. But rather than just, you know, WordPress and business, you know, tell us about why you just love skydiving, why that's just so important to you, and what's that one big idea you get. So I think that'll be interesting as well, to kind of get a little bit more personality from some people. And it allows us to hear a wider variety of voices, too, by doing a shorter format.
You might not be able to disclose it now. Maybe it's still in the workings, or maybe it's something that you sort of announce like when you get there. But last year, it was definitely a theme in place. And from my perspective, it was a lot of like what we talked about today, from the small business going to the bigger size businesses. You know, that struggle, that hustle, that the good, the bad, and the worst, right? And sort of people expressing that. It was a very emotional event from a lot of the speakers, right? Corey Miller, the gentleman that started that sort of feedback pop-up survey button, I forget his name, but he spoke before me, and he talked about how like VCs and investors just like obliterated his business, and it was just like, wow. Yeah. Is there a particular theme you're trying to work with, or did that just sort of happen last year?
I can't tell you what this year's theme is. Okay. Sally gets mad if I do that.
All right.
But yes, there is a theme to every year, and I can... Because we say everyone's the last one, and when we're done, we're done. And then time just goes on. And then somewhere Sally gets a little like light bulb, a little bit of inspiration. And she goes, okay, this is it. This is what the next Pressnomics is about. And then all of a sudden she gets all the enthusiasm and energy back and we go. And after PN3, we were done. And then she read Corey Miller's post about mental health and the iceberg and kind of all that. And she's like, wow, you know, we've faced that. And I wonder how many other people are facing that. So that's the theme. Yeah, we're going to do Pressnomics 4. And the theme is going to be kind of taking care of yourself and mental health and kind of imposter syndrome. And so every speaker that we kind of tagged to present, we kind of, you know, we're not strict about it. But we kind of fed them. Hey, here's the headspace that we're thinking this year. You know, kind of bring your talk into that direction a little bit.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, it's definitely, I really enjoy that part of it, right? It's certainly not like a WordCamp, but for other events that I've gone to, there still is no particular theme. It's just like, you're here to learn, here's the tracks. It's cool. It's fun, whatever. But that's a nice sort of icing on the cake, right? The sort of theme stuff that you do. I'm excited for Pressonomics 5. When is the date? One more time.
April 6, 7, and 8 in Phoenix, Arizona. And tickets are on sale. There's, I think, about 40 left. So get them before they're gone.
I got it up on the screen right now. It's Pressonomics.com, PN5. You have a Bentley and a Ford Fusion. How the hell did that happen?
look at the guy though. It's Patai right? Dunbar.
Yeah, yeah.
and he was wearing a Paisley shirt.
Yeah.
it's like this.
This is like fantastic. Every internet marketer's dream photo right there. Right, it's just like putting him up alongside that Bentley. Hey, yeah, one other thing. That this is a much more of a greedy question from me. But how important, or where do you see sort of independent media outlets in the WordPress space? It's just something that's been on my mind. Folks like Brian Krogsgaard, The Tavern, ManageWP.org, like these communities that sort of foster WordPress news or actually break WordPress news. What is there something there? Like, do you think that that market's going to mature a little bit more, going to get a little bit more valid in the next year or so? Or do you think that we've hit sort of our cap on this whole sort of WordPress news independent media industry?
Well, I think all the players that you've mentioned serve a need which exists since the dawn of commercial enterprise, and that's a trade journal, right? So name the industry, whether it's dental hygiene, whether it's electronics, whether it's automobiles, there's a handful of trade journals that the proprietors of those businesses or the people that work in those businesses subscribe to kind of keep up to date on industry trends and such. And so it makes perfect sense that WordPress has one. You know, it's a huge amorphous ecosystem. And so I think these properties play a very key role in kind of centralizing, distilling down the information, because I don't have time to visit 20, 30, 40 blogs to catch up, you know, find out what Matt's up to, find out what Matt is in you, find out what, you know, my competitors are up to. I don't have that time, but I know I can hit 1, 2, maybe 3 bookmarks and get caught up on everything that's going on in the world. And I think what Brian's done with Krogsgaard is pretty great. I'm a supporter of PostStatus. He's a customer, full disclosure, whatever. But I'm really quite a fan of what he's been able to do in terms of coalescing kind of that higher level discussion, that, you know, it's not gossip. It's not so-and-so said this, or here's today's controversy. It's pretty deep, in-depth most times, unless I open my mouth, pretty in-depth conversation that's happening. And kind of, he really takes a very holistic view, especially in his notes and stuff, on kind of the trends and what's happening in the market and stuff. So is there another, and again, as I said about the channels, there's going to be a 1, 2, and 3. I think Brian's kind of owning top number one. So 2 and 3 might shake out. And I don't know if there's room for a 4 or 5. So yeah, we might've hit saturation.
Interesting. I'm just always asking my guests about that perspective. Any other words of parting wisdom? Do you have 5 minutes of fire in you that you want to shoot out, or are you good on any kind of motivational quotes?
5 minutes of fire. Wow. 3 years ago, I would have taken that 5 minutes and gone nuts, but I've cut my hair. We're a mature company now. I'm trying to be a little less antagonistic, but to your point, I think what we've really focused on in 2016 at Pagely is management styles and recruiting and how we work together as a team. And so books like Turn the Ship Around, amazing. That whole philosophy is that, as I said, typically people are held responsible or given responsibility and held accountable for the results, but they're not given any authority. And so kind of that whole Turn the Ship Around book is about inverting the power structure so that even the lowest or the newest person on your team has the authority to actually make decisions against the company's mission goals. So we've spent a lot of time last year with the whole team, especially at our retreat out in Carlsbad, where most of them can make it. We spent hours just discussing this concept that you shouldn't be asking Josh for permission to do something. You shouldn't be asking Sally for permission to do something, because you already have the authority to make that decision. Our job as founders and our jobs as leaders is just to set the mission parameters and set the mission goals. But it's up to you to figure out how to execute whatever is in your realm of responsibility and make the logical decisions to get us to that mission goal. So we've really spent a lot of time on that. Another great one is Extreme Ownership is another great book about the Navy SEALs. Actually, Brian, Tournard from Delicious Brains.
Tournard?
He mentioned the book as well in his 2016 wrap up. It's just taking extreme ownership of your realm of influence, your realm of philosophy, your realm of impact. So even our support team, even our sales development reps, they take extreme ownership of everything that they're, you know, within an arm's length. They own it. There's no one to pass the buck to. You know, when we parachute them down into the mountains of Afghanistan, there's no calling home, right?
Right.
To use an analogy from the book, you need to take ownership of the situation and handle your business. And so we've instilled that from the top all the way to the down. And I think that's really what's making us successful at Pagely. And so my tip, I guess, is to encourage all business owners to understand that there's people a lot smarter than you out there that you should perhaps recruit and work with, and then get out of the way. Let, you know, tell them what the mission parameters are, and then get out of the way. Let them execute. Let them perform. Trust them to help you, and you know, you'll go far that way.
It's Pagely.com. It was a discussion by the founder, Josh Strebel, today. You can find out more about his company at Pagely.com, where we help big brands scale WordPress. And if you go to their website, you can see all the big brands that they're helping. You can check out their pricing model, their technology. Look, it's the cutting edge, you know, setting the bar, raising the bar and continuously setting the bar for the competitors trying to keep up with them. Check them out at Pagely.com. And the website for the event, the big event that I cannot wait to attend, is Pressnomics, Pressnomics.com, PN5. You can go there, check it out. Like Josh said, about 40 or so tickets left. So make sure you go ahead and buy that, buy those tickets today before they're all gone, or before I start selling mine on the black market for 10x the price. Josh, where can folks find you on the web to say thanks?
Strebel on Twitter. And if you want to read some of my more insightful and silly stuff, it's at saint-rebel.com is my personal blog.
It's mattreport.com, mattreport.com/subscribe to join the mailing list. And guess what? I got a new product coming out if you're interested in starting your own WordPress podcast. So you can look a fool like me on YouTube Live or Facebook Live or across SoundCloud. You can buy that, or you can actually sign up for it at thepodcast.win. That's podcast.win. And that'll be a book that comes out hopefully by the end of next week, co-authored by my co-host, Joe Casabona.